is different in ways that are meaningful in terms of Talmud Torah and what our focus should be, what we're looking for, etc., or not. So we talked already about it being Sefer HaBris, according to some, Sefer HaYashar, of the Netziv's perspective, and what I was suggesting. Additionally, the Gra's comment that it's Shoresh HaTorah, and again, this idea in the Medrash also that knowing literally what was created, Biyom Rishon, Biyom Sheni, Biyom Shlishi, I don't think he means literally, but at least conceptually, the account, in other words, Torah's account of Bereishis is itself something which is information which is transforming of the individual. That's the Medrash's idea, that that is connected to the concept of Geirus. Why can't you just learn or extract the values of Torah without being this Geir? The answer is, in order to fully appreciate, it's a fascinating idea, the purpose of creation, which is what the Medrash says, Al-Mal Ha'olam Omeid, which of course is a reference to Mishnah in Avos, is understood by most Rishonim as not only what is, many Rishonim make the distinction between Omeid and Kayam. But there are two Mishnayos. There's a Girsa question also, right at the beginning of Avos, and right in the end of the first Perek as well. You have two different lists. Torah Voda, Gemilas Chasadim, and then Din Shalom Emes. So which one is Kind and which is Omeid? Anyways, the Rishonim, a lot of them that comment on it, suggests that the word Omeid, as opposed to Kayam is, technically what keeps the world going in terms of efficiency, mechanically. Omeid is the telos, the purpose of the world. So when the Medrash uses that phrase, that only people who undertake Mila and Geirus are people who could appreciate Al Maha Olam Omeid, and then in conjunction with that, Ma Nivra Biyom Rishon, Ma Nivra Biyom Sheni, Ma Nivra Biyom Shlishi. So I don't think I'm reading more into it than it is. I think the point is that, of course, everybody can open up a Bereishis who has access to it, and in the original or in translation, and can read the accounts of what took place. But only a person who is imbued with Taryag Mitzvos and with the commitment that requires, a Bris Mila, which is itself a topic in its own right. Bris Mila, generally speaking, is both perfection and imperfection. It's self-sacrifice for the sake of a greater spiritual perfection, but the self-sacrifice is a physical imperfection, or the idea that man has to strive in order to achieve the perfection, physical and spiritual, that is his destiny. So the point is that the Mila / Kabbalas, Ol Mitzvos, etc., is the prerequisite for a proper appreciation of Bereishis, both its purpose of creation of the world, as well as the details and the structure as the Torah represents it. So again, that too highlights the idea that Bereishis isn't just an account, and it isn't just the background for the real Torah that begins with the history of the Jewish people, either in the middle of Bereishis, or even more so in the beginning of Shemos, it's Klal Yisrael as a nation, but that there are really critical foundation, like we said, whether it's Yashar or Bris or Shoresh HaTorah, etc. And then last week, or last 2 weeks ago, I guess, because we didn't have last week, the last time we talked about it, tried to demonstrate that according to the Ramban's reading of various Midrashim, in his Hakdama to the Perush al HaTorah, in his Hakdama to Bereishis, and a couple of other comments that the Ramban makes. So the word Torah in Ve'etna Lecha, Saluchos, Sa'evan, HaTorah, HaMitzvah, the word Torah actually refers to this part of Torah. So that's quite amazing, I think. Quite amazing. Anyway, so what do we all mean by all of this? So in the end, what is it all about? So I think the point is that a proper understanding of Bereishis exposes us to tone setting and paradigmatic values that are critical as we go forward, to the categories, to some of the Hagdaros to some of the things that we're supposed to continue to strive for, ideals. It establishes truths about, and again, an ideal perspective on interrelationships. And it reflects, you know, people trying, you know, struggling to be Ovdei Hashem in a very changing world in the early part of man's history, trying to, you know, rise above, you know, both the forces of nature and internecine conflict, and all the different vicissitudes that, you know, can become very challenging, you know, for man, and how, in practice, Ovdei Hashem were able to overcome, what the challenges were, what the choices that they made were, etc. And all of that is supposed to be kind of a guidepost for us going forward in the world after after Bereishis. And the truth is that a lot of the things that we're exposed to in Bereishis are very positive, right? They're positive role models and paradigms, right? You know, the promise of Gan Eden, and you know, the ability of a Noach, you know, to be an Ish Tzaddik for Dorshin also, especially L'Shevach, you know, Tamim Haya B'Dorosav. And of course, especially what we're up to right now, but I'm not going to speak about this minute, I don't know if I'll get to it today, and that is the significance of the revolution that was brought about by Avraham Avinu, the Av Hamon Goyim. When we speak about Avraham Avinu as the Av Hamon Goyim, not only the father of the Jewish nation, but the fathers of nations, right? Avraham Avinu is really somebody who changed the way that the world, you know, perceived the Rabbonu Shel Olam, etc. Elokei Avram, Elokei Haaretz, all the various contributions that Avraham Avinu made, and that's all very, very critical. That's L'Tova. Also L'Ra'a, if we, you know, study the stories of Bereishis closely, so we're exposed to the flaws, the challenges of man, his ego, the various things that the Yetzer Hara, the various things that distract him. These flaws are also meant to be paradigmatic and to underscore important things about blueprint of man and the world and relationships, etc. The chait of Adam and Chava, the chait of the Dor HaMabul, the Dor HaFlaga, again, the murder of Hevel by Cain, the murder of, or the killing, or the, you know, manslaughter, depending on your point of view, I guess, of Cain by Lamech, right? The paradigm of Sodom. I'm talking about only the early history, the, you know, conduct of you know, Mitzrayim and Gerar, Avimelech and Paro, even, you know, some of the heroes of Bereishis, when studied more closely, you know, the flaws again are also paradigmatic. Noach after the Mabul, Lot is not a hero, but, you know, Lot's you know, mixed status as somebody who, you know, on the one hand, you know, tries to emulate Avraham Avinu, but who does so in a kind of context which makes his conduct, you know, probably more grotesque than admirable. All of these various things are b'tova, things to emulate and to approximate and to aspire to and to be inspired by, and l'ra'a, things to avoid, to inoculate against, etc. So in a sense, what we really have is, you know, in the beginning of Bereishis in particular, till you get to the Jewish part, the Avram part first, and then the Avraham part. And even if you were to count the whole Sefer Bereishis of vis-a-vis Shemos, as we know, this is just the fact, we're dealing with a huge range of years and epochs, right? Literally, we go through, you know, from Bereishis to pre-Gan Eden to post-Gan Eden, pre-man, post-man, pre-Gan Eden, post-Gan Eden, you know, again, Dor HaMabul, Dor HaFlaga, all of that. The historical sweep is amazing. The geography also is very wide-ranging, but even more so, the myriad of events and types of personalities and varied personalities, contrasting epochs in these few psukim relative to the rest of the Torah. And then once you start with the avos, everything is much more focused on a single family initially, an extended family, than a nation, and basically several generations. In the Ramban, in Torah Hashem Tanima, and also in Perish Allah Torah, says, you know, the fact that one of the reasons that we have the whole history of Bereishis is in order to highlight, you know, how little time there really was from the time of Avraham Avinu until Matan Torah. Ramban says that's very important because it makes concrete, you know, the reality. You know, this isn't like, you know, old stories and mythology. This is you know, just a few generations. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't really that far from Avraham Avinu, and just, you know, all you need is a good transmission from, you know, a great grandchild practically, and you're there. You know, since so much of Torah rests on Mesorah, so, you know, part of the early history of Bereishis, right, is to establish that there really wasn't such a big gap between, and especially since people lived, according to the records, so long. So, you know, even getting from, you know, from Adam, you know, till Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, isn't as long as it seems. And it, again, underscores concreteness, etc. That's his argument. But what I'm suggesting, well, that is certainly also true, but I'm basically highlighting, you know, the opposite. And that is that, you know, the whole Torah, you know, basically, is about, you know, one family, one nation, and about, you know, two or three generations. And therefore, the pre-story, the Bereishis part of it, you know, in addition to what Ramban says, but it also gives the opposite impression. The fact that it is so, you know, the years span and the geography and the personalities and the different nations is so great is surely intended also to be not just background for, but background for in a different way by means of contrast and the scope of the range is part really of the story. It's a necessary background for what will later be, right, will subsequently be the focused national taking over from the family history, or the fledgling development of Klal Yisrael that takes place. The Manhigus of Moshe Rabbeinu, which is single and also singular and of course paradigmatic. Moshe Rabbeinu is the ultimate leader, the Melech, the Kohen Gadol, right, the Navi, the teacher. Basically, almost all the Torah is focused on one generation. But the point is that everything that precedes it, in addition to the point of the Ramban, is, I think, intended to establish that this one nation, with the Manhigus of Moshe Rabbeinu, with the codification which encapsulates the values of Taryag Mitzvos, first through the Asar Sadibros, Maimon Har Sinai, and then through Taryag Mitzvos, all of this is intended to capitalize on both the good and the bad of Bereishis. And if that's really true, so we can really appreciate why it really is Sefer HaBris and Sefer HaYashar, and you know, what the Medrash said about the Geirus, and why the Ramban thinks that it's Torah, and why the Gra thinks that it's the Shoresh of everything else. We're supposed to look at the wide-ranging, you know, and varied personalities and events, you know, that take place in this much smaller, you know, number of psukim, as and understand them in such a way that the Taryag and Klal Yisrael and that focus, like, is intended, like, to integrate and to project, you know, the positive, the aspirational aspect of it, and also to preclude, you know, the flaws and the negative. But you can't just start with the focused history and the norms. First, you have to get a taste of what some of these wide-ranging interrelationships and values are, and then we can understand why it takes 613 mitzvos and the kind of discipline and a focus on, you know, a single family first that becomes a nation, and the idea of amanitchar and skula, you know, not as a way of, you know, turning our back on the rest of the world, but as a way of, again, idealizing everything about that past history and the range of proper, you know, human behavior and flawed human behavior, and why that needs to be, you know, why that needs to come together in the context of Maimon Har Sinai and Yetzias Mitzrayim, etc. Striving for then the earlier adjusted paradigms, you know, becomes part of this thing. And that's kind of what I was alluding to when I made a couple of comments, and again, each of these is a topic in its own right, and, you know, since we want to move more quickly, so I'm just, I allude to them again just a little quickly, so you'll know what I mean, but each one really could be, you know, the subject of its own, you know, thorough discussion. Again, the very beginning of Gan Eden, when man's creation is described, or when we start earlier, the order of creation itself, of course, reflects a certain interrelationships. The Medrash is, you know, filled with fascinating insights. Again, you know, we study them as children, so, you know, it's, you know, sometimes we don't take a step back and appreciate, you know, the nuggets that are there. You know, whether it's, you know, the relationship between Shemesh and Yireach, and the idea of, you know, power sharing and greed and arrogance, things of that sort. The discussions in Rashi, you know, about again the relationship between the balance of Shemayim and Aretz, right? To the, in addition to being very appealing, you know, stories, which they are, but the idea of this being part of the Masorah is to establish, you know, paradigmatic relationships. So the order, the change in order in some cases, the idea that there should be a process in creation in which the relationship between different aspects or different realms, Shemayim and Aretz, you know, Mayim and Adama, and then later different, you know, elements in each, you know, are complex, that there's not a single relationship. Sometimes we have psukim that seem to overlap, you know, in the relationships, is intended to establish that the relationships are complex, so that they develop in a certain way. Yetziras ha'adam, separate from the chayos, as the sea, as the, you know, culmination of creation, in a certain sense, as the beginning, if you start from Shabbos. Afar min adama, together with nishmas chayim, the fact that man is given kriyas Hashem, you know, that, you know, it's betzelem elokim, the fact that adam is nivra yechidi, right? All of these things, again, each is a topic in its own right. The Mishnah Sanhedrin, ki'ilo kiyem olam mole, or kishem shepartzufeim, enon domo zulazu, kachin deoseim domo zulazu, the idea of individuality. All of these things are implied by the Torah's specific account, or in some cases, dual account of the creation of Adam. Again, the different midrashim about the differences in account, all the way down to our own time in the Rav's famous, you know, essay of Lonely Man of Faith, which is in a long tradition of trying to interpret, you know, different motifs of man. So while that's done in a very sophisticated way, that's really implicit in just reading the psukim carefully and understanding how Chazal tried to reconcile these discrepancies. Not simply to reconcile them, but to underscore again interrelationships. The creation of Chava, also accounted for in the Torah in different ways. Her name, both as Isha and as Chava, you know, the process of her creation, you know, Mitzela, with the Tardema, with all that implies about, you know, how much knowledge and how much, you know, Adam was, you know, kept in the dark, or at least didn't have to visually, you know, witness aspects of it for the sake of, you know, Kavod Ishto, especially the idea of Du Partzufim, which we find in various Midrashim and Gemaras, the idea that, you know, there was a change again in the relationship between husband and wife, or a man and woman, from a single being, right, with two dimensions, let's say, to splitting up that person. And of course, again, that something which is, you know, repeated in Sheva Brachos, the various Yotzer Ha'adams, and something that the Ramban speaks about in his Perush Al HaTorah, and that the Ravid speaks about in his Hakdama to Balei Nefesh, as, you know, reflecting again the existential relationship between man and woman, husband and wife. The idea that it's a kind of rediscovery of a unity, but again, the unity and the diversity, the azer and the kenegdo, right, all of this is part of the process of creation itself when we read the psukim carefully, and especially al pi chazal, and that is something that continues to this, you know, to this very point in history, to define the unique relationship that you know, that the halacha ascribes, you know, to ishus and kedushas ishus, an issue we talked about, of course, a lot last year, but which of course is crucial to Yahadus. And again, reading the stories, as I'll explain in just a second, the story of Lemech and his two wives, and Chazal's suggestion that he had a, you know, he had a wife for childbearing purposes, and he had a, like a trophy, I guess, wife, you know, who, you know, he didn't want, you know, physically, right, to have to undergo the changes of Piri of Arivia, and that somehow is characteristic of Dora Mabel, a comment that Chazal, you know, just kind of throw in, but one which is very, you know, very profound, something which we, you know, encounter again in the context of Er and Onan, and the obligation of you know, Yibum, which they spurned. I mean, this idea of a different perspective on Ishus, one which is not about V'hayu Lebasar Echad V'Davak B'Ishto, based on this idea of du partzuf, more, you know, the husband and wife, or the wife as an object, you know, of pleasure. Again, somebody who, you know, is looked at in a functional rather than a, you know, existential, you know, kind of a way. So again, if we understand the process of the Bria, and then we also understand the history, you know, from early Bria until Klal Yisrael, and in some cases even post Klal Yisrael, right? We put those things together, we have a certain picture of Ishus. The Dor HaMabul, again, Chazal's comment about Lemech and Shtei Nashav, is one which, in light of the, you know, psukim about the Mabul, Hishchis Darko, the idea that Arayos, together with Chamas and Avodah Zarah, you know, this is kind of like a volatile mix. These aren't three different things, things that, you know, feed off each other. The idea that Arayos, you know, can be an aspect of Avodah Zarah or of Chamas, is fascinating. Again, it's not so, we don't appreciate it so much because, you know, we grow up with it. You know, we read the Rashis, and that's an amazing and good thing. It's only a good thing. But sometimes because we grow up with it, we, you know, we take it more, you know, for granted. But it's a very powerful comment. So the history of it, you know, the early history, the things that we encounter, the Lemech, the other aspects of it, really reinforce this in a very dramatic way. And let's say in every marriage, in the context of Sheva Brachos and other minhagim of the wedding, we hearken back to Yitziras Ha'adam and the particular methodology of Yitziras Ha'adam as well. Similarly, Gan Eden, again, the original formulation by Yosem and then by Yenicheu B'Gan Eden. I always like to quote the line of the Netziv, who says that, you know, the original purpose was just Sima, and man would be, his purpose would be simply to contemplate, you know, Gilui Shechina. It would be Nene, you know, Miziva Shechina. And then the change was made that it should be by Yenicheu La'avda U'L'Shamra. But then the question always is, and this is the question that in terms of the Rishon, Rabbeinu Bechai asks very explicitly in a bunch of these cases, the Rabbeinu Sholem, you know, can't change his mind because he, you know, he's not a human being, right? He has all of history, you know, in front of him. So what do we mean when we say that the original intention was Vayasem and then it was Vayinicheu? Like, what change of mind? And numerous other changes of mind in the nature of man and the creation of the world, the destruction of the world and the reconstruction of the world. You know, what do we mean by all of that? So I think the answer always is that there's a certain process and there's a certain benefit to the process. Number one, there's Bechira Chavshis, of course. But the point is that the unfolding of a process, you know, is something which is very important. And it's important that, you know, the ideal, you know, and maybe even applied, you know, in the real world for a second, before, you know, a change was made, that echoes in the world and in the values of the world. So even if Adam, in the end of the day, was put in Gan Eden La'avda or La'shamra, and that's a powerful theme and lesson as well, especially since La'avda and La'shamra are two different things also, right? One implying a more creative and, you know, a volitional aspect, the other being more conservative with a small c, you know, preserving, kind of Masorah-esque. But the point is that maybe the point wasn't so much a change in his destiny as it was in the method of attaining that destiny. The way to achieve Gilui Shechina or being Nene Miziva Shechina at the end of the day is to take a more activist but also restrained activist a role in the world. So the goal, right, is best served either because of man's development or maybe L'chatchila this way. But then you have a pasuk which highlights the goal and another pasuk which highlights, you know, the methodology. And I think that's very much a good paradigm in things that take place in Bereishis. The same is true for the Chazal's understanding, I think, of Din and Rachamim. Again, the Torah begins with Elohim, and we all know the Medrash that says that the Rabbanu Shalom had to be Meshatef Midas HaRachamim, and that's why it became Hashem, and then it was Hashem Elohim. So the question is, again, philosophically, what do we mean by that? The Rabbanu Shalom originally thought that the world could attain Kiyum in the context of Din, and then he found out that he was wrong. Obviously, that can't be the case. But the point is that man had an opportunity, and it's because of man. There's an important lesson of responsibility in that, that the shift is based on human decision and human responsibility. But in addition to that, I think the point is that while there is a shift in method or a tempering of din, the fact that din is the original basis of the world remains a critical perspective. It means that there's a certain ideal aspirational aspect to din. And we try to manifest din, you know, albeit through rachamim, and the relationship between din and rachamim is a very fascinating thing. Sometimes it's still Elohim, sometimes it's Hashem Elohim. Chazal tell us, again, we had this in just, you know, the Medrashim and Rashi in the last couple of Parshios, you know, that sometimes we even use the word Hashem, which is Midas HaRachamim, in a din context, and sometimes we use Elohim, which is a din, in rachamim context. Tzedakah, as if to highlight that, you know, your behavior, you know, can turn, you know, rachamim into din, or can take din and use it for rachamim, etc. These are all value statements. Some moadim are about rachamim, some about din. Sometimes it's din barachamim or rachamim bedin, right? Just look at the, you know, the Ramban's treatment based on Kabbalah, but other things also based on the Medrash of, you know, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. So we have different outlets in the year and different mitzvos in the Minyan Tayag, you know, which highlight, you know, different of these themes. They're never gone. The model, the paradigm of Mishpat, of Elohim, is something which is expressed, just that it's now expressed in a more complex way for practical reasons, efficient reasons, and also in some cases for idealistic reasons. But knowing, being exposed to that initial Elohim is something which is indispensable to appreciating how Tayag is going to diffuse or manage or oversee the proper balance. And the same is true about other changes in history itself. Gan Eden being a great example of it. So man is put into Gan Eden, again, the Sima, and then the Hanacha, La'avda, L'shamra, and then, of course, he's chased out of Gan Eden. And the question again arises, like, what's the point, right? Why not just create him outside of Gan Eden if this is what's going to happen to him. Or if you just want to be, say, well, look, that's Bechira Chavshis, and there's a lesson in that, fine. But then the next question you want to ask is, so is pre-Gan Eden, or is Gan Eden life still relevant in a post-Geirush from Gan Eden world? But the truth is that in the Halacha and in Agada, but we still talk about, you know, Gan Eden Mikedem. We speak about, you know, pre-expulsion from Gan Eden, again, in the context of, you know, Chasam Bekala in particular, but not only there. And sometimes we speak about returning to a state or the pristine pre-Geirush Migan Eden state. Again, the best example of that maybe is Shittas HaRamban, about Eitz V'Das, you know, Tov V'Ra, Ramban's idea that, you know, that we still strive, you know, to get back to that pre-state, and that B'Mos HaMashiach, we will return to that state. Whatever that exactly is, that's a very challenging topic in its own right, because obviously there's a certain ambiguity here. You know, if, obviously if man didn't have free choice, he wouldn't have had the free choice, you know, to destroy or to create his free choice. So that problem aside, the point is that the Ramban sees, you know, Gan Eden as a remaining ideal, and is something that is also part of the future, you know, history of the world. Hayom Aras Olam, we speak about the Brias Olam, right? And we continue to celebrate Shabbos, Kibo Shavas Mikol Melachto Shabara Lekim Lasos, right? Even though we live in a post-Mabel era, right? We still speak about Adam Harishon, we still read about him, not just to get to the Noach part. So obviously, the world was reconstituted, and that's very important, but we have to look at that as a process. We have to continue to cling to the ideals of pre-Mabel and whatever they were, as well as to study the history to understand better and, you know, therefore to be able more efficiently to avoid the problems, you know, that that brought about the Mabel. And again, Achilas Basar is a great example, you know, of this as well. But there are different views as to whether or not vegetarianism constitutes an ideal, because that was the early state, or on the contrary, man wasn't yet sufficiently developed, or he wasn't sufficiently differentiated from the animal kingdom in terms of his merits, or in terms of his just power relationship with them, so that it was inappropriate initially for him to, you know, to feast on his fellow creatures, you know, once the hierarchy was established, or maybe it's a bidyabed and it reflects a concession to the Yetzer Hara. There are different views, as we know, in the Mefarshim, and there's really conflicting evidence, and these have a great deal of significance in terms of, you know, going forward, our relationship with animals and how we see them, you know, the question of basar, etc. The fact that in the context of the reconstituted world, we're once again reminded that, or maybe for the first time, emphatically reminded about the Isser of Retzach, you know, about whether it's animal or human, the fact that all of a sudden, according to Chazal's understanding, we're also warned about Rotzeach Bishkaga, right, is surely connected to this license of Basar, and once again highlights, you know, the interrelationship of various Yetzer Haraz, if you will. But it also, again, highlights a certain very critical point. When Cain kills Hebel, so it's fascinating that the Torah doesn't provide a narrative of the Machlokas. It's like incredibly striking omission. Right? It's the first murder, and you know, we're left basically to speculate. We know that Cain and Hebel represent different perspectives on Avodas Hashem. Right? That's also an important paradigm. Although, you know, again, we have to be medayic and flesh out what they are. But how does that lead to murder? And what does that say about how easy it is for man, you know, to abandon Selam Elokim, and how connected that is to his perspective on Avodas Hashem and the question of Kina and so on. So the fact that the Torah almost doesn't, it's almost like the Torah is telling us that to tell you what their argument was about, you know, would be to trivialize, it would be to imply that there was either some sort of justification, or that this was some sort of an anomaly you know, that happened for this particular reason. It's almost better to leave out the narrative, and the Torah does this many times, because either nothing can justify, and it's also just part of a much bigger story. It's part of what we know about them, and we don't want to be distracted that way. It's like the chait of, you know, Nadav Avihu, you know, the silence surrounding some of the development of Avram, which I want to speak about next time we speak about the Avos as well. So there's a lot to talk about in those terms. But what's also fascinating is the response of Cain to, you know, being caught in the murder. And you know, Hashomer Achi Anochi. And then the Medrash elaborates even more so, that when he's told that he's, you know, going to be punished, he's almost like outraged. You know, if the Baruch Shalom is able to be Nosei Avon for other things, so he can't be Nosei Avon for a little murder, you know. And it's just a shocking display of, you know, kind of the rejection of the notion of responsibility, the idea that, you know, I can be a victim of my passions or my anger, and it's the Baruch Shalom's job, you know, to forgive me, etc. And then, in the you know, just, I guess, end that he, you know, that he suffers, but he's killed by his by Lamech. So Lamech basically, you know, basically says to his two wives, we spoke about them a second ago, that, you know, it's not his fault, he did it b'shogeg. And again, the way the Medrash explains his language is, you know, that you know, Retzach b'shogeg is lo shma, you know, Retzach. So again, this too, together with, you know, Lemech's perspective on his two wives, and undoubtedly there's a connection between those two things as well, but is meant, I guess, to highlight, you know, this pre-Mabel, you know, world, the world that begins with Cain's, you know, denial of any responsibility. Shomer Achi Anochi, you know, and even once confronted, you know, the Dmei Achicha, you know, being Tzoek, even then, you know, it's okay, good, so be no say avon. And then Lamech's argument that, true, I killed him, but it's shogeg. Shogeg isn't, he didn't say he was anus, by the way. Right? He said he was shogeg. The question is whether he was shogeg or anus, but it's fascinating that the Chazal, you know, say that he said that he was shogeg. And that, not therefore I shouldn't be punished, but therefore I'm not a rotzeach. And this, of course, you know, is exactly the point. And that's where the, you know, perspective of Taryag, you know, is so sharply contrasted, you know, with that of, pre-Mabel, certainly, and even to some issues, you know, Sheva Mitzvos, you know, B'nai Noach, this sense of Achrayas. So a proper understanding of attitudes towards Arayas, attitude towards Gezel, attitudes towards Retzach, is part of the story, not only, you know, what brings you to picking certain people and focusing, but, you know, understanding, you know, the concept of galus and so on. So Noach and the reconstituted world, you know, is reminded, you know, basar, yes, but this new world, this post-Mabel world, has to be one where there's, you know, heightened sensitivity to Tzelem Elokim, and not only b'mezid, but also b'shogeg, even ba'anus, perhaps. And again, that serves as an important foundation. From the beginning, from the very beginning, chait of Adam and Chava too is a paradigmatic, you know, kind of a chait. Kolamosiv goreya. It's just fascinating. The Torah begins with the kolamosiv goreya, and the Torah ends with the uniqueness of Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu, which is kolamosiv, you know, goreya. In a certain sense, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is, you know, is the Navi that is singular, and it's one of the Kare Amuna that you can't add to the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. A Navi Rashoi Lechadesh Adavar Mayata. So right from the beginning, if we're sensitive, the idea of Tzivui Hashem as a limit in Bechira Chafshis, where Bechira Chafshis is supposed to play itself out within that, but not in contrast to that, the idea of the Nachash as a Mesis. Which isn't strictly about Azara, something we talked about a couple years ago, those who were here, but the concept of a mesis as a moraid and about Azara as an act of merit, because the Nachash wasn't over about Azara, but that was the ultimate merit of that generation. These are, again, if we understand them well, they're foundational definitions and interrelationships that end up explaining a lot about, you know, the extended notion of Avodah Zarah and merit and nesis, right, in the context of Taryag Mitzvahs itself. So, in that sense, the Dar HaFlaga is another great example. You know, the, you know, which seemingly is unity, but a unity not for the sake of elevating people, but exploiting, you know, Tzelem Elokim, Ruach Memalala, you know, Safa Achas, and exploiting, you know, human fraternity, you know, for the sake of the lowest, you know, common, you know, standards. Something which is exactly the opposite of Kal Yisrael's notion of unity, of Kal Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh, where each person is responsible for the other person's shortcoming, ad kedei kach. So a proper understanding of the pre-Avram Avinu history explains a lot about the chiddush of Avram Avinu, and going forward, the chiddush of Klal Yisrael and of Taryag Mitzvah. So I guess we'll stop here because it's a little late. I want to finish next time by discussing the revolution of Avram Avinu and how that plays out as part of Sefer Yashar as well. Okay, stop here. Thank you.